This is an interview with Governor Victor Attia at his office in downtown Portland, Oregon. The interviewer for the Oregon Historical Society is Clark Hansen. The date is 6/11/98, and this is sort of a catch-up from where we were several years ago when we finished the interview. So this is tape 60A and side one. I thought I'd like to begin by just having you give a summation of how you felt your political career went and what you basically accomplished.
That's not going to be a short answer, I can tell you. I know we well covered my introduction into government and the thoughts that went through my mind at the time and why I got started, and people would ask me that question, and I know we've covered that pretty well. I served as a minority member in my entire career in the Oregon legislature, so the things that occurred during my tenure, all would be things that probably I would be the only one to remember, and I don't remember all that much. And when I say that to you, so much it was involved in making what I would consider bad legislation better, proposing amendments. I was respected as time moved on, and I was able to get amendments and change things and move them in the direction where if they're going to pass it, this is the way they ought to be. I remember spending hours of time at when I was not in favor of a sales tax, developing a sales tax bill. And my thought was that if there ever becomes a law in Oregon, it better be a good one. And so I was going to give it my shot, although I wasn't in favor. That kind of thing was where I was involved. Land use, sometimes it's misunderstood. Land use planning, for example, I keep hearing that I was opposed to it. And that just makes me angry as hell, because I wasn't opposed to it. I was opposed to some of the language in the bill. I was opposed to some of the ways it was going. But I wasn't opposed to land use planning. And I always use as an example that one of the elements in the original bill was that it allowed the state of Oregon to have a regional land use body plan for Oregon. And hell, I'm a person that the government closest to the people is the best, meaning, you know, city, county at the most. And here he's talking about having somebody land use plan somewhere up in Region 10 in Seattle. Well, this kind of a thing got out of the bill. So those were the kinds of things that occurred. But I feel good about my tenure in the legislature. I feel that I did have a positive influence and that some good legislation passed. And some of it, of course, that I sponsored, and you went through all of that. Now we get to my time as governor. And here's where I'm going to take a little more detailed time. I do remember this, and I first ran in 1958. It was extremely difficult for me to, you know, tell people why they ought to vote for me. I guess it's the modesty factor, if you will. But, you know, you finally get over it. You say, well, these are one of the things I've done, and I feel good about it. And so it isn't just braggadocio. You're telling people how you feel. Thought that I have, and when I said, you know, I didn't look like we'd completely finished what we had in mind, I wanted to recap my governor years. And when I was leaving, people said, well, what do you think people will say about your tenure as a governor? And I said, well, you know, it's not up to me. It's, you know, up to whoever's going to write Oregon history. But as time has moved along, I'm not so really sure that I ought not to at least get my shot in. And so I'm really anxious to say why I think my tenure as governor was good. Because so much of it, I notice it now as years have moved by, people take some things that are here as if they've always been here. But they haven't always been here. They weren't here when I started as a governor.
What kinds of things are you referring to here?
Well, of course, and I'll be more definitive about it, but the diversification of the economy in the state of Oregon, that wasn't always here. the internationalization of the state of Oregon. That wasn't always here. Those things, even the Columbia Gorge legislation wasn't here. The Regional Power Authority wasn't here. The unification of the courts weren't here. I'll get a little more detail into that in a second. But anyway, I've decided now that I'm not going to be all that modest. And I'm going to really try to say it as I see it. Now, again, understanding historians and writers will make their own decision because they say, well, Victor T., well, they don't mean just Victor T. Anybody's going to talk about his own history, obviously, is biased in their favor. So they have to be unbiased. And I want to... Okay? One of the things that I really am proud of, and this is interesting, so many people remember, for example, Tom McCall, and we had the gasoline shortage and the odd even, and so what? And incidentally, there was a long lines and there was a lot of tension and all the rest. They remember that. They don't remember when we had the same gas shortage when I was governor. And the reason they don't remember it is because we avoided the crisis. And it seems to me so fascinating in political life that there's the hero that comes after a crisis occurs. But nobody really pays any attention to someone that avoided the crisis. Let me shift over. All these grand remarks about Iacocca saving Chrysler. But nobody thinks about the chairman and president of the Ford Motor Company where there was no crisis. Or the chairman or the president of General Motors, where there was no crisis. But they get no credit for not having gotten to a crisis mode. When the gasoline shortage came up, I said, I'm remembering what had taken place. I got a hold of the gasoline dealers and I got a hold of some of the others, sat down, and look, guys, we've got a problem we've got to deal with. And instead of everybody going out and making press releases, let's work this thing out, which we did. And there never was a crisis. Avoiding crisis to me was important. So people don't remember it because the crisis didn't occur. We didn't have the problems that we have today, that is with ballot measure 5, the limitation of property taxes, the problems with the school funding and all the rest. Could have, because there were some very bad property tax limitation bills. And as a governor, I, among others, of course, were out there campaigning against it. And so they never passed. I, as a governor, was out there on bills that wanted to repeal Senate Bill 100, the land use laws. And they never passed. And people stopped doing that now. Maybe even more difficult was when the Bhagwan and the Rajneesh was here trying to keep the level down, and that was very difficult for me politically. People said the governor's not doing anything. Well, the governor was, but the governor wasn't telling the world what the governor was doing. And other politicians, it was good to say, kick the SOBs out, and that was good politically. Well, let me give you some examples. And I'm going to relate something, but I'll come back to where I am. I said, when I met with the media many times, and I conclude there's one of three ways you can answer any question. I know the answer, and I'm going to tell you. I don't know, and I'll find out. Or I know, but I'm not going to tell you. Well, the Rajneesh was in that category.
I know, but I'm not going to tell you.
I know, I'm not going to tell you. And they'd say, well, now we're ready for the Bhagwan, no matter what they do. The Rajneesh, well, what's that? I'm not going to tell you. If I tell you, obviously I'm telling them, and I don't want to tell them. Well, that was the mode that we were in. My chief of staff, Jerry Thompson, and Bob Oliver, my legal assistant, they met with them. I never met with them constantly. To assure them the governor does not bargain, which they wanted to do. I had the National Guard as at the height of it, when it got really intense. I had them on training at Redmond. Well, you had the helicopters, we had personnel carriers, we had all that kind of stuff, in training, quote, in training. So they were standing by. Obviously, I'm not going to tell them, or the public, as a matter of fact. Those were the kinds of things that we were doing quietly. They brought all the street people in. I kept telling them, you brought them in, these poor souls, you've got to pay to get them back home. And I kept pressure on them, but I did never tell them. I made a deal with the Salvation Army. Quietly, we got money to them to put the, you know, get the people, put them on the bus, and send them back home. Never told the Lajis that, nor the public. All of these things are the matter of avoiding crisis, avoiding the thing that could be worse than what was happening. I feel good about that. We did it. That's my mode. That's my philosophy. Many will say, and they have repeatedly, the management of state government during the recession. And incidentally, Oregon got to 12.6% unemployment, which was, I don't remember now, third or fourth highest of the nation. Lynn Newbery, who was a state senator at one time and was in my transition, said to me, and I don't remember when it was, anyway, the depth of the recession at the end of the year, he said, Vic, you must be doing something right. And I said, well, what do you mean, Lynn? Well, he said, I haven't seen any article on the front page of the paper about some family living in the back of an automobile or somebody getting kicked out of the house. I haven't seen any of that stuff. Well, that's kind of symptomatic of the way we were handling the whole situation, not just welfare. But it was a matter of being able to do it well and do it precisely. So it just didn't happen. I had good people working for me. We had the right philosophy in terms of how we were going to try to deal with government. Everybody got cut. I mean, all the budgets were cut. I kept saying I want to do as well or better with less money. And I would say most often we did. We had more welfare reform. And it wasn't a matter of a philosophy, let's kick the rascals out. It's the fact that most people didn't want to be in welfare. And we had to do everything we could to keep them off or to help them get off. So that was our philosophy. So, you know, you can casually say, you know, that got you through the recession. We got to stay through the recession without any problem. But it was a very difficult, we made some very hard choices. I think I've told you on the tape, I would go home and I like my body was beat, but it wasn't. You know, it was just sitting there making these decisions and wanted to make them sure he made them right. Even to the extent, like for example, people, they get to reach a certain economic level, they go on welfare. But if you say we were going to cut all budgets 10%, these people are just barely into welfare. Maybe they can survive, but the people on the bottom of welfare, a 10% cut is devastating. So we're talking about the same body of people, all on welfare, but some are more desperate than others. But you have to understand and know that.
When people refer to your tenure as being a caretaker governor, and I guess you could see that either as complimentary or derogatory, depending on, because of the situation you were having to deal with the recession and everything like that. How do you respond to that?
Well, you know, you can't really, maybe hopefully by this conversation,
yeah,
somebody will look at the tape someday and say, well, by God, that's not true. Because we were more than just caretaker. There were a lot of things going on besides just running state government the way the state government ought to run. Many, many things are happening. But so people will mention that, meaning the recession and how we managed to get through it. And as I tell you, I had very good people. When we talk about how did I deal with some of the things, I was very resentful of Neil Goldschmidt during his campaign talking about the deadwood in my government. That was a cruel thing. And an unfair thing to say about the people that worked so hard for the people of the state of Oregon. But, you know, that's the politics of it, and that's why I want to talk and get my view across. People will say that. But let me tell you the Atiyah version. I was very proud of the fact that I traveled Oregon extensively. You know, I'm always suspicious of round figures, but certainly at least a quarter million miles of travel inside the state of Oregon. And it's because I believed it was necessary to get out and to talk to people. And the thing they call the other Oregon really never appeared during my administration.
The other Oregon meaning,
you know, downstate, upstate, eastern Oregon, western, whatever it might be.
Uh-huh.
Because I was out there talking to Oregonians, sharing with them, being with them. I mean, I was there, working real hard to make sure that everybody got the same kind of attention as the major urban areas would get. Matter of fact, one of the things I got a lot of static on was I wanted to have the state own an airplane. Somebody gave me one of the little wooden toy airplanes and said, "This is the only airplane you're going to get." But my whole idea was that my state agency heads, you know, if they're going to Eastern Oregon, they have to take a day to go there, a day while they're there, and a day to come back. If you had an airplane, they could go there, they could go to two or three towns in one day and come back. Well, you know, the legislature didn't have the guts to do that. I asked for it. I had the guts to ask for it, and all I got was a lot of criticism and static. But, it's just a matter of getting out and let people know. Well, that's part of what I consider one of the assets of my administration. I like people. I like Oregon. I like to travel Oregon. And I think that many of my, at least, successors didn't have that same attitude. I operated with a limit on the growth of state government and a limit on the growth of state employees. The first thing my successor did was to immediately ask for the elimination of the limit on the growth of state government, and incidentally got it. That's something that shouldn't have happened, but it did. But now I've got a list here. Let me go through my list. Out of my office, I have a very clear recollection of this. It's just like a photograph. The Congress had passed a law changing the opportunity for people to get food stamps, and it was very difficult. And as a matter of fact, my affirmative action officer, Jackie Winters, came in, and she says they were getting a lot of complaints. The people that purely run out of food stamps. And I said to her, "Jackie, we can't wait for Congress. They made a mistake. We can't wait for them to cure it. We've got to do something about this." Out of that conversation came Oregon Food Share. It was the first, and I don't know whether it's now the only, but certainly for a long time, the only nation agency for collecting, storing, and distributing food to the hungry. And now it's called Oregon Food Bank. Now, this is one of those things that people think always was there, but wasn't there until we started it. But we started, and I'm very proud of, it was called then Oregon Food Share. Oregonians, and I was among them, had a kind of restless feeling, mine was more than restless, about getting some kind of legislation to keep the Columbia River Gorge as beautiful as I saw it for my children and grandchildren. I had a very special feeling about that. But Washingtonians really weren't that excited about it. They looked at Oregon, we looked at Washington. And certainly by the time you got up to Olympia, you know, they were long removed from the Columbia River Gorge. I had to somehow get Governor Spellman's attention, because I said to myself, if the two of us as governors can say something ought to be done about this, maybe we can get this whole thing cranked up and going through Congress.
Was he receptive to that?
Well, it took a while, a lot of negotiation. You know, he wasn't thinking about the gorge. I was. And so it's not a matter of picking on him. He just wasn't on any part of his agenda. We had to make it part of his agenda. But we finally did make an agreement. We agreed on principles. We agreed and signed a bill, his signature and mine. And that's the beginning of what really put a lot of heat and started the thing moving. at that point, there were a lot of actors in it, and some that really deserve a lot of credit. Mark Hatfield's one of them. He's one of them that got the bill passed. And it's his influence that made that finally happen. I can claim a good part of it because the President Reagan was going to veto the bill. And I called Jim Baker and said to him, it was his chief of staff, Jim, I have never asked anything of the president. And he said, yeah, Vic, I know, you haven't. I said, I want this. So the president didn't veto it. Well, nobody, of course, was going to know it unless I told you, and I just now told you. I got to worrying about, early on, about the power. We have dams in different areas. We have some coal fire plants around, and not just in the state of Oregon. I kept saying that the power was like a large pool. You don't have different levels in a large lake, meaning Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Montana. You know, it's one large lake. And so I sent then Lee Johnson, who was my chief of staff, I sent him on what I call a Kissinger route. I said, now don't back any of these guys into a corner, but let's start doing it. So he traveled Washington, Idaho, Montana, back, and we finally worked out, and that out of that came the Northwest Power Planning Council. And I would tell you also, it was our idea to include in there the fishery. Again, this is something people think was always there, but it wasn't until we had a hand in making the creation of it. This probably is less fascinating to people than the ones I just mentioned, but as a legislator all these years, we would have a fellow would give us a forecast for income in the state of Oregon, and we'd use that then to create our budgets and balance our budgets. Well, during those years, he really couldn't go wrong. You know, Oregon was growing. No matter what he predicted, it was going to be more. You know, I keep reading in the newspaper that the state found, quote, found money. Well, we didn't find it. It was, you know, the economy was good. So no matter what this economist said, he couldn't go wrong. But we didn't know, you know, what he was making his decision on, because he was selling to us. If he told us, then we didn't need him. I said, well, no, we can't have one person doing this. So we created the econometric modeling of the economy, and I created the Economic Council, Advisory Council. And that turned out to be one of the really very good things that happened, because we had the downturn, we had the recession, we had it well enough, we could now with the econometric model and our Economic Council, we could get a head start and do something about rebalancing our budgets when we had a chance to do it and time to do it. Had we not done that, I don't know what would have happened. I really don't know what would have happened. Well, as I say, that's not quite as sexy, but that was very important. Again, people think I was always there. It wasn't always there. I do love that the shirt server purchase. That was just a really a happening almost. The opportunity came to acquire it, and I think people need to understand that in private ownership, well, first of all, you can't fish in the chutes from a boat. You have to go ashore. Well, obviously, you can't go ashore on private property, and this was private property, but it was being sold, and it would have gone to private hands, and fishermen couldn't fish from the banks. Oh, what a wonderful thing it was. We had all these different agencies get together. The Oregon Wildlife Heritage Foundation spearheaded the thing. We raised money and we bought it.
You were in a club that's over there on the Deschutes River for fishing.
The Deschutes Fly Fishing Club was one part of the folks that helped us, but there was a lot of others. Uh-huh. And the various Trouts Unlimited and you know all the steelheaders and all of it. It was wonderful. It was a wonderful thing, and it was great to be a part of it. I created the Black Commission and the Hispanic Commissions. And that was interesting. I happen to be, incidentally, of a mind that it's my hope the day would come where you don't need those. But I also knew that we you know, you needed to highlight it, you needed some spearheading, and you needed some way to keep it constantly in front of the people and the legislature. Mm-hmm. These are things you have trouble understanding. You know, the Democrats were in control. They're for the people, you understand. They're for the little people. They're for the common people. They gave these commissions $1. Now what it did is legitimize the commission, but it also said, now you've got a fishing license, go raise your own money. And I'm saying to myself, now wait a minute. These folks are supposed to be for all these people. You know, that's the reputation they have. And I don't. I'm a Republican. I'm not supposed to be for these things. Anyway, I did create them. We finally got budgets for them.
What was their resistance to it? Why?
I have no idea.
Really?
I have no idea. I don't know why. I can't answer the question. It would seem to me that no matter what it was important to have these things, but they didn't do it. I created the Senior Services Commission. These were to make sure that the seniors had all the services that were available to them. And actually, that led to a division for seniors, which I'm not quite sure if that's there, but it was interesting because a lot of seniors were a little suspect of it. Reverend McGettigan was really my point person. He was a respected senior, and it worked out very well, and it helped the seniors in the state of Oregon. Prior to the 85, the 85 session. I think that's right. In any event, prior to the session, there was a burning of a cross on the lawn of a black man in Milwaukee. And I was really, really very angry about that. I hate bullies. I have since I was a kid, and I don't know why. I just hate them. And these are bullies. Anyway, we finally worked out a bill that made racial and religious harassment a felony in the state of Oregon. And incidentally, and I don't really want to put this for the tape, I will tell you that I thought, again, I'm working with the Democrat legislature, that that would be just a slam dunk. It was at 1 o'clock in the morning on the last day of the session, probably next to the last, or very close to next to the last bill that was passed. And I argued with two leaders, Democrat leaders, early in the morning to get that bill passed. And it finally passed. But I thought it would just go winging through because I was angry about this cross burning. These people who are supposed to, quote, be for the little man, you'd think, go. It was in my message when I addressed the legislature at the start of the session. Anyway, I feel good about that. Court reform. Yep.
For work, you know, but I didn't look scroungy or anything. But old Joe, he had an old hat on, you know. He looked really scroungy-like. So, in those were the days when the communists were trying to get into the ranks of the working class people. You know, they were trying to, they're always something or other, more wages or better working conditions, and they try to get these people over on their side, you know, communist party. And so I got picked out. And I don't know why. Maybe like I could work or something like that. Of course, work was not new to me then. Anyway, he came around, he looked at Joe. He says, "Are you a communist?" And I piped up. I said, "Nah, Joe's not a communist." He, you know, I was standing right alongside. I said, no, Joe isn't a communist. He's a friend of mine. And he picked Joe. So both of us went to work. I went to work back in the woodshed where they're unloading wood that came on the boxcars. That's how we got started. And then eventually we ended up in the finishing line where I remember I had the job of edging and finishing seats to chairs on a machine. Went around, and you know, these things were, these parts were glued together. Parts of the seat were glued together. And once in a while,